This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. Should governments negotiate with hostage takers, or maybe the question is, when should they negotiate? Earlier this month, the Taliban abducted Italian journalist Daniel Mastro Giacomo, his interpreter, and his driver in southern Afghanistan. They cut the driver's head off, but earlier this week they released the reporter in exchange for five members of the Taliban who were being held by the Afghan government. The fate of the interpreter is not known. A spokesman for Italian Prime Minister Romano Prodi said, "If there's a chance to save a life, we must do all that we can do." Washington and London both criticized the deal. Dutch Foreign Minister Maxime Verhagen said, "When we create a situation where you can buy the freedom of Taliban fighters when you capture a journalist, then in the short term, there will be no journalists anymore." Although it's widely believed that governments have quietly paid for the release of some previous hostages, this appears to be the first time that prisoners have been exchanged openly. Later on in our program, Ask Amy's Amy Dickinson on people and pets and pet food. But first, negotiations with hostage takers. If you have questions about what happened, the role of the United States government, and the possible consequences for soldiers, reporters, and aid workers in combat zones, our number is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. Email is talk@npr.org. You can also join the conversation on our blog, which is at npr.org/blogofthenation. Joining us now to update us on the news is Ian Fisher of the New York Times. He covered this story in today's newspaper and speaks with us now from his office in Rome. Nice to have you on the program today. Ian Fisher. Ian Fisher, are you there? And we appear to have had some problems with the line to Rome, and we'll try to get back in touch with Ian Fisher. Again, he's a reporter for the New York Times who reported on today's development earlier this week. Mastro Giacomo, Italian journalist, who'd been kidnapped 15 days earlier by the Taliban in Afghanistan, arrived in Rome and wrote about the story in his newspaper, the left-wing publication La Repubblica, where he described, for example, seeing the head of his driver cut off by the Taliban captors, saying it was something that was present in his mind, that he could see it. And after the people who cut off the head of his driver wiped their blade on his clothes, he thought he was next. Indeed, then the body of the driver was thrown into a nearby river, and he thought that he would be there. Ian Fisher, are you there?
I'm here, yes.
Okay, thanks very much for being with us today. Recap the story. Tell us, the reporter who was kidnapped and what we know about the deal to release him. Pretty much, we're interested in the deal.
Well, the deal, I mean, I don't think we'll ever know all the details of the deal. But the deal, as it's been described by Afghan and Italian officials, is just what you just said. You know, it was five Taliban officials. Apparently, one of them is of the brother of the local, you know, of the Taliban fighter who did the kidnapping, and a couple other people. Two of them sort of spokesmen. There was apparently a sixth who was asked for, but he decided not to go out of prison. One person suggested it's because he's been cooperating with the Western force, with American and allied forces in Afghanistan. But that I haven't seen that, you know, for sure. And that seems to be it. That's what they wanted. There were reports that the Taliban also wanted the Italians to leave Afghanistan, which was turned down, I guess. But that's what we know or think we know.
And had these men, they'd obviously been arrested, had they been tried? Had they been convicted? What was their status?
I don't know. They were under, apparently, according to the U.S., they were not under NATO control, but they were under Afghan government control. I would assume they were, I can't say. I just don't know.
And you mentioned the United States. Obviously, the U.S. has a great deal to do with what happens in Afghanistan. What about the American role in this?
Well, that's one of the you know, the sort of outstanding questions. You know, most people believe that, you know, the U.S. still plays a large role in what goes on in Afghanistan. I think it would certainly have an interest, and has certainly demonstrated an interest in the past, of having wanting to have direct control over prisoners, especially those who they think will be carrying out terrorist events. I mean, possible terrorist attacks, as, you know, we've seen with renditions and arrests of, you know, possible suspects all over the world. So, you know, most experts sort of feel, certainly, or expert people who I've spoken with feel that if the U.S. wanted to stop it, they certainly could. I'm not clear, or nobody's clear, that they actually encouraged it or helped it. But if they wanted to stop the transfer, they could have, and probably could have, and decided not to.
As you pointed out in your story, there's also still remaining tension between the United States and Italy over the situation of another Italian journalist who was kidnapped in Baghdad, and who, after on her release, as her car approached an American checkpoint, U.S. soldiers opened fire, killing a top Italian intelligence agent who's been involved in her release. And the Italians have also been widely believed to have paid ransoms for the release of her and others in the past.
Correct.
And so this is different, though, to do it openly.
Yeah, in fact, that's one of the things that I think struck a lot of people, was just how you know, generally it's very, very hush-hush. You know, some parts of the government, I mean, here in Italy, will report that, you know, there was a ransom paid in the case of Ms. Segrena, and also specifically two aid workers, also in 2000, well, I guess that was in 2004, in Iraq as well. And, you know, the government will officially deny it. In this case, they were quite upfront about it. It may partly have been that it would be very, very difficult to hide, and also the people who kidnapped them kidnapped Mr. Master Giacomo and the two Afghanis were celebrating, you know, very publicly and letting the press know very clearly that you know, they'd gotten exactly what they asked for in these prisoners. So maybe they just decided it would be too difficult to hide. Also, there have been some reports that the Italians, and again, this is unsubstantiated, so you know, think of it what you want, that the Italians were very, very aggressive about this trade happening, that they were so insistent that it would have been difficult for them to, you know, sort of hide it afterwards anyway, or cover it up after anyway. But again, I don't know that. That's just the report.
Another difference is those earlier cases were under Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, a supporter of the war, a supporter of President Bush, now an anti-war government headed by Romano Prodi, though his coalition is a little shaky, too.
Yeah, I mean, it's difficult to draw that exact distinction, you know, pro-war, anti-war. I mean, a couple things. I mean, certainly Prodi's people were against the war in Iraq, and probably wouldn't have agreed to go in, you know, to be allied with the Americans in Iraq as Mr. Berlusconi did. At the same time, you know, certainly they support, you know, Italian involvement in Afghanistan. So there's a bit of a difference, but you know, Italian foreign policy has remained the same. And while, you know, Mr. Prodi doesn't have the same relationship with Bush and Washington that Berlusconi did, I think most people believe that relations are quite strong, and the policies are essentially uniform, again, with the exception of Iraq and a few smaller things.
Ian Fisher, thanks very much. I know you're on a tight deadline yourself. We appreciate your time.
Sure. Thank you.
Ian Fisher, a reporter for The New York Times, who joined us from his office in Rome. Joining us now is Vincent Brossel. He's in charge of the Asia-Pacific Desk for Reporters Without Borders, and he joins us from his office in Paris. Nice to have you on the program today.
Good afternoon.
And your office released a statement today that first of all, we'll get to the questions about the release of the journalist and the deal that was made a bit later, but also asking a lot of questions about what happened to the interpreter in this case.
Yeah, it's true. I think the case is not over. I mean, obviously, Daniele Mastrogiacomo now is free. He's back in Italy, and his family is very happy. And we are all happy that he's safe and free. But first of all, the driver he was killed. He was slaughtered by the Taliban, and the interpreter, his guide, is still detained by the Taliban. So I think we have to be very careful in saying that this case is now over. I mean, it's not over at all, and we have to keep the pressure on the Taliban, which is something difficult. But I think the Afghan journalists are ready to fight for the release of their colleague, because in this case it's a team. I mean, you have the Western journalist, but this man needs a driver, he needs an interpreter, he needs a guy, and these people, the Afghan people who are working with foreign journalists, are very crucial, and they are a very important part of all this work to collect information and to report about the situation in Afghanistan or in Iraq or anywhere else.
And does this, do you believe, make the situation of journalists in combat zones anywhere more dangerous?
Yeah, I think the deal that was accepted by the Italian government is a very wrong message to hostage takers, because it means that if you want to free one of your colleagues, that if you want to free someone even that has blood in the hand, you can kidnap a journalist, you can kidnap a humanitarian worker, and you can put pressure on a government, and if the government is ready to accept this type of deal, it might create more problems in the future. It's quite worrying. And I just spoke with some journalists who are now in the south of Afghanistan, and they had to take extra security measures because they really care that they are very afraid of what can happen now.
Of course, in Iraq, it's extremely dangerous for journalists to travel almost anywhere. The situation in Afghanistan has been much, much easier.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, the Taliban uprising is mainly in the south and the east, so you can move freely in most of the country. Iraq is just a huge chaos, and for the foreign journalists, it's almost impossible to work freely. They have to be embedded, and even if you are embedded, you can be in danger because the U.S. troops are under attack. So you cannot compare both countries. But what is true is that this crisis is, first of all, I think that we have to say that the Taliban, we have to blame them on what they did. And this Mullah Dadullah is a notorious killer, and he committed so many atrocities in the 90s.
I'm afraid we've got to take a short break. Stay with us. We'll be back in just a minute. We're talking about the release of an Italian journalist in exchange for 5 members of the Taliban. This is NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Neil Conan in Washington. We're talking today about the release of 5 Taliban prisoners in Afghanistan in exchange for the freedom of a kidnapped Italian reporter. The deal is being sharply criticized by Western governments. Does this send the wrong message to potential hostage takers? Does it put journalists, aid workers, even soldiers at increased risk? Should we ever negotiate with terrorists? 800-989-8255. Email is talk@npr.org. Our guest is Vincent Brossel, who's in charge of the Asia-Pacific Desk for Reporters Without Borders. He's with us from his office in Paris. And let's see if we can get a caller on the line. This is Peter. Peter with us from Berkeley, California.
Hi. I don't mean to appear naive, but I think that it's incumbent upon everyone to address the larger contextual question of is it strategic and wise for enemies to talk with each other, period? And it seems to me pretty obvious that the answer to that is yes. And, of course, the problem is integrity going to be part of that communication process? But I think we have to try, and I think the greater the scope of our attempt and the more persistent we are in trying, the more successful we're going to be in generating mutual understanding and teasing out the legitimate needs that are hiding behind illegitimate needs. And I think we should do this at a global level as much as possible. And, of course, Talk of the Nation is part of that process.
Well, yes, but is there a distinction between saying what are your political demands in broad term and saying negotiating the release of kidnapped reporters?
Well, you know, that's where I come with a lot of humility, because these issues are so thorny. I think they're thornier and thornier the more we fail to do our best to aggressively attempt generating mutual understanding before crises and before these more thorny, more limited situations.
Vincent Brossel, what Peter is suggesting, of course, is ongoing discussions between the sides in Afghanistan, and I'm not sure that is not going on. Nevertheless, to do it openly gives the opposition, who has been routed just a few years ago from their capital in Kabul, gives the opposition a claim of political legitimacy, and particularly this one group of Taliban.
I think I'm quite agree with your listener, because, I mean, in this type of crisis and situation, you can negotiate with the Taliban. I don't think we can blame the Italian government for talking with them, for negotiating. I mean, we have to blame them about the deal they made with the Taliban. That's a problem. I think he's right. I mean, in every crisis, even in the war, you have to talk with your enemy, because if you want to finish the war, it's a starting step. So I cannot blame the Italian government. And even at the beginning, the foreign affairs minister of Italy said that there is no way to negotiate with Taliban. They are just a bunch of terrorists, and we will not talk with them. And finally, they talked with them, and finally they made a sort of, amazing deal. So I think we have to face such type of crisis with humility and to find all the ways to negotiate, but not to create more troubles in the future. And I think the Italian government was wrong on this point.
May I add a point, please?
Go ahead, if you would keep it quick, Peter.
Yes, I'd just like to add how crucial I think it is to involve the public as much as possible, because the more, and also fact-checking experts in broadcast situations, so that the public can provide a balancing influence. The larger the audience, it seems to me, the greater the ultimate truth that comes out.
All right, Peter, thanks very much for the call.
Thank you.
Let's go to, this is David. David's with us from San Mateo in California.
Good morning.
Good morning.
And I think we absolutely should not negotiate with terrorists under those circumstances. It's a slippery slope. It's been proven. And if they can kidnap people, terrorists of any stripe, they're barbarians, and it just sends an ultimately defeating message to us. Negotiating with your enemy, sure, that's one thing, but not under the circumstances of kidnap.
Vincent,
we should not do that.
And Vincent Brossel, you said it was appropriate to approach the Taliban to discuss the situation, but the deal was a bad deal. What kind of a deal might have been a better one?
I mean,
you asking me?
No, I was asking Vincent Brossel.
Yeah, I mean, I think that the Taliban also expected a sort of international attention on them, and we have to take all this into account, and also that in Pakistan or in Afghanistan, you have many people who can have a sort of influence on them, and in the past there have been some cases of journalists or humanitarian workers kidnapped by the Taliban. And they were released after appeals from some mullahs from Pakistan or from some journalists from Afghanistan and Pakistan. So I think the mistake that was done is to refuse a dialogue at the beginning, and after you have to give everything, because finally the Italian government was under so much pressure because the driver was killed. So it means that the next one will be the Italian fellow. So. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say that we, in all cases, we have to negotiate and be, friendly with the Taliban. But in this case, it was very clear that it was a huge and very difficult crisis. So I think they started on very bad terms, and finally they had to give up everything.
Hmm. Dave, thanks for the call, David.
Thank you.
And Vincent Brossel, thank you for your time today. We appreciate
it. Thanks to you.
Vincent Brossel, in charge of the Asia-Pacific Desk for Reporters Without Borders, speaking with us today from his office in Paris. With us now is Johnny Pico, a former UN hostage negotiator who now works in the private sector as a political risk consultant. He joins us from our bureau in New York, and it's nice to speak with you again.
Thank you.
It's unusual for this deal like this to be made so publicly, but how common is it for these sorts of quid pro quo agreements to be made more quietly?
I think the issue of negotiating to save the life of a citizen is incumbent upon any government to try to. The question is, what are the principles within which this negotiation takes place and how far anybody is prepared to go? It's interesting that in this conversation, nobody ever mentioned, in my view, what is a very discriminating element of this case, and which is, were these five Talibans already being sentenced according to a due process of law? Because if that is the case, we are speaking about one situation. If that was not, then we're speaking about a different situation. Many years ago, I found myself exactly in that position. It was in Lebanon. It had to do with German hostages. And I was asked to switch two German hostages, which were clearly innocent bystanders, so to speak, for two Lebanese individuals who had been sentenced for terrorist activities in Germany. And I simply refused to do it, even under pressure by my boss at the time, Boutros Ghali, the Secretary General of the UN. It took longer time, but eventually they came out. Mm-hmm. I think the issue here is not the question of negotiating with the kidnappers. The first step is find out who the kidnappers are. Let's be very clear. There are some individuals who take hostages around the world and have been doing so for a long time, who simply are not taking hostages because they want something back or because they want to give them back. That's a different kind of individuals. They take hostages because they have a conversation going on with their potential supporters. Mm-hmm. And then there are those who take hostages because they want to talk to us on the other side. And one has to understand first who they are.
And the difference being... I guess in a way, a videotaped beheading posted on the internet is a conversation with potential supporters, as well as, I guess, a message to the opposition. In this case, one man was beheaded, and another man was then negotiated and released.
Yes, but again, I think that there's got to be a consideration being given to the fact. Number one, every single situation is different. And number two, the individuals or the individual or the institution who undertakes the negotiation will always be put in a very, very hard position. But let me tell you something. Whatever decision is taken by the negotiator, he or she will live with that decision forever. And that is the real consequence of this. This is not an easy decision to take. And again, I think the word humility was used by your participants early on, and I think it's a good word to use. But also, we have equally to be clear, if somebody has gone through the due process of law, to exchange that person for an innocent hostage, I think it's a serious issue.
And again, for those who joined us later, Ian Fisher, the New York Times reporter in Rome who reported this story, I asked him that question, and he said he did not know where in the judicial process these particular five prisoners who were released were. So we'll have to await further details on that. Let's see if we can get another caller on the line. This is Mike. Mike with us from Santa Cruz in California.
Hello.
Mike, go ahead, please.
Yes. I wanted to make an observation on apparent duplicity in talking about dealing with terrorists. As we look back at CIA operations through the 80s, through the 90s, and currently with Seymour Hersh's allegations about activities in the vice president's office, it seems that we have a long, long history of dealing with terrorists. And at this point, to talk about it being somehow not a good thing to do seems quite duplicitous. And that's my only comment.
Okay, thanks for the call. Johnny Pica.
Well, I think that one has to be realistic about this thing. I think every government I've known who had found itself in this situation in one way or another tried to communicate with the hostage holders, whether it was officially and unofficially through intermediaries or through people who were not members of the governments, that doesn't matter. I think the issue is not so much the contact with the hostage holders, but is within what framework you're prepared and how far you're prepared to go. Mm-hmm. Because I would agree, in this particular case, if I was today a journalist in Afghanistan, I would feel more in danger.
And aid workers as well. You'd have to assume that their value would be greater, too, to potential hostage takers.
I would agree.
Let's go to Sam. Sam's with us from Dover, Delaware.
Yes, my name is Sam Zena from Dover, Delaware, and I just want to contribute to the program by just expressing a little of my past experiences as a hostage. And the risk involved there is if you succumb to their demands, like the request for five of their prisoners released, and you release those prisoners to them, them, they're going to come back and capture more and make more demand. So it's very dangerous to give them what they want.
So
rebels, they all behave the same. So if you succumb to them, you're going to open corridor for more attack and for more hostages.
Even as a hostage yourself, Sam, you oppose the idea that your release should be negotiated?
Not be negotiated based on exchange of what they want. If it is going to be negotiated, let it be negotiated just on the release, not to give them what they want. If you give them what they want, they're going to come back and request for more.
And obviously you were released. Were your kidnappers, your takers rewarded in any way?
No, they were not rewarded. You see, the difference between the West and Africa is that in Africa, you are never going to see, if you will see, hostage takers, they're going to be very less because nobody is willing to pay attention to you. So if you took somebody as a hostage, where you'll be wasting your time. You see, and compared to the West, somebody is willing to give you whatever you may want to release that one individual. So that's the big difference. Hmm.
Sam, thank you very much for that. We appreciate it.
Welcome.
We're talking about the question of negotiating with hostage takers. You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. And Johnny Pico, let me add a little bit to what Sam has to say. As a person who's working for a government, and you were working for the United Nations, but nevertheless, a journalist, an aid worker, these people often have important political relationships. A government would come under tremendous pressure to please do something, get our guy out safely.
Yes, and also let's add and be very clear that it is the first responsibility of any government to look after the security of its citizens, no matter where they are. The question, as I said earlier, is what is the frame within which you are prepared to negotiate for that particular human life? And here the point is sometimes you may help that particular human life and then jeopardize many more. And that is an incredible ethical dilemma that any of us who have been in that position has to face. And I can tell you, having gone through that with Terry Anderson and all the other famous hostages in Lebanon, could have done more, could have been others, in this particular case, some other Israelis who are missing, that I could have helped if I'd only played better my cards.
Mm-hmm.
And the question is, at some point you have to decide, when is the right time to play your card? And the consequence of that decision will not only be affecting others, but will stay with you forever. I think that is a very clear issue to me that nobody can deal with unless you are the person involved in the negotiation.
Mm-hmm.
But there is no question that in some cases, the decision which are taken will have negative consequences. And again, I go back to the point of origin. We have to try to understand who the kidnappers are, because that determines the strategy and what you can hope to do, let alone what you can do.
Let's talk with Gerald. Gerald with us from Georgia.
Hello.
Hi, Gerald. You're on the air.
Yes. I understand the dynamic of the debate going on here. I've listened to different aspects of it, not just on your program, but over time. And my question is to you, Neil. You're the journalist and the reporter. And putting yourself in the place where the Italian reporter was, what would you want done? Would you want released at any cost? Because what I think doesn't really count here, because you're the one whose life is really at risk here. So what does the reporter, individual reporter, really want to happen?
Some listeners may remember I was in an analogous situation in the confusion at the end of the first Gulf War in 1991. I was among a group of reporters who were captured by Iraqi forces and held for about a week, and we had some dangerous moments indeed. Nevertheless, you hope that people were negotiating for your release. At the same time, I certainly hoped that nobody made any kind of a, you know, I have to say, Gerald, that the thing I didn't want to see was anybody risk their life about this. I didn't want to see any troops coming in to try to save us or rescue us or anything like that to save my sorry butt. And that didn't happen, and we were eventually released to the hands of the International Committee of the Red Cross after about a week. So far as I know, no demands were made, and no recompense or reward of any kind was made, but all cases are individual, and I have to say that I'm also glad that my company put pressure on the government to do something, because something worked. So I think we'll have to end it there. Gerald, thanks very much for the call. And Johnny Pico, thank you very much for your time today.
Thank you.
Johnny Pico, a former hostage negotiator for the United Nations. He joined us today from our office in New York, where he's a consultant on political risk. When we come back, we'll change subjects. Ask Amy will join us, Amy Dickinson, talking about pets and pet owners and the recent scare over tainted pet food. I'm Neil Conan. We'll be back after the break. It's the Talk of the Nation from NPR News.